We're talking with Steve Carman, and you'll discover in this hour what kind of talent this man has. And I want to tell you, folks, his impact is long-lasting. But we're certainly talking about Me and Bobby D, a terrific memoir about this guy, Steve, and Bobby Darin. And even in those days, I guess, in the 50s, when you guys were starting out with this little band, and you can talk about that, there was a sense, I guess, that you might have had and that others had, that Bobby Darin was on his way to something, right?
Oh, yeah,
he had that
absolutely.
Sort of spark.
There was no question about it. When, you know, in my own background, I started to play a saxophone that a cousin gave me because he didn't want to play it. And I got into high school, and I was not encouraged, and I took maybe 3 weeks' worth of lessons, and they were stopped because my grades were falling out. And one day I gave an unaccompanied saxophone recital at high school. I was a sophomore in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Kenny G, I was like Kenny F. This was not good. You know, I was really not good at it. But in any event, this kid comes up to me on the stairway. And he was like, you know who Leo Gorcey was, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Leo Gorcey was the kind of the leader of the dead end kids. He was a tough kid, a street kid. And he comes up and says, do I want to be in a band?
Mm-hmm.
And that moment literally changed my life. Because I, in my family background, I had no, even though I have an older brother, I had no one who was interested in music and no one who was supportive of it. And Bobby was a drummer. And, again, a learning drummer, not particularly good, but we were two kids, like kids starting out today who play in a garage band. And, he came from a broken home. His father had died in prison. He lived in the slums under the Triborough Bridge. I don't know if you're familiar with that part of New York.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It's a funky neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And then more so than it is now. And his goal was to get out. You know, if there was any one thing about Bobby is the fact that, and as you said, his name was Walden Robert Casado then. And we, you know, Bobby, and he wanted to get out of the environment that he grew up in. And he had chosen music as the way out. No matter what he had to do. He wasn't a good drummer. He was a learning singer, certainly. And, but we kind of found a bond between us. He became the brother that I didn't have. He was 1 year older than me. But he became the brother and the support for my music. And we started to do, we played through high school in our band, and neither one of us could read music very well. And when it came time to work in real bands with real musicians, we couldn't cut it. I mean, I couldn't play well enough on my saxophone, and Bobby was certainly not a good enough drummer, and he didn't read, certainly couldn't read drum music. And he said, why don't I buy a guitar? He talked me into buying a guitar, and let's do an act. And we formed this little act, the two of us, and then, you know, you talk about starting and doing material that we've done by other people. We were doing a folk act like Harry Belafonte.
That's true. The Harry Belafonte influence here is still around today.
Sure.
And you describe in this memoir some of the seedy nightclubs that you guys played, and obviously the ups and downs of life on the road, the early romances. Bobby was quite the ladies' man. And it's really remarkable. The dialogue that you write is I guess dialogue that you remember pretty clearly, because it seems as though he's alive on each page.
Well, I do remember it, and you know what I remember most of all, you know, like, you know a joke and you know the punchline, the setup, you know where it's going, and I knew where the scenes were going, and I have kept, literally, people are amazed. I have scrapbooks. I have about 8 scrapbooks, and I don't know where I got to be a pack rat like that. Well, when I was a kid, everything that we did, I would, you know, clip it out of the newspaper and throw it in a box. And then, you know, 5 years later, sit down in an afternoon and piece some stuff together. And when we started out together, our first shot, our first real shot at success was on a show called Stage Show. It was a television show. And this was in 1956. And Stage Show came about because Jackie Gleason, who used to do an hour variety show, had decided that year that he was only going to do a half an hour. And the half hour show was a sitcom called The Honeymooners. I wonder whatever happened to that, right?
Yeah.
And the other half hour was going to be filled with this variety program called Stage Show, which had the Tommy Dorsey Orchestra and the June Taylor Dancers, which is a very big, kind of like the Rockettes type of dance group. And every week there was a slot for a singer with a new record. And the week before us, there's a bit of showbiz trivia I'll throw out at you, Jordan. The week before us, Elvis Presley made his television debut on Stage Show. and Ed Sullivan and Steve Allen get all the credit, you know, for this was 6 months later that he came on their show. But Elvis Presley appeared the week before us, and we appeared on the following week, and Elvis came back the week after that.
That's a good point, because for anybody who's an Elvis nut, they all know the Dorsey brothers had a big part to play in.
The show went off the air.
Right.
I mean, the show didn't get good ratings, and it was canceled, and it kind of went into show business.